oneness with the spirit. And the oneness of the spirit, you have to hear it, because it's the audible life stream within the body. The mind wanders all the time. The mind thinks in its own level that it knows and it can assume and recognize what God is. And the mind tries to describe to itself what it feels God can be from its own outward education and from its outward acceptance of life. But that's dualistic. That is the phenomenal part of the mind, that is the conscious part that is functioning. That's your consciousness. It's only your conscience, which is the realistic part of you, the real part of you, the survival part of you, the part that continues from life form to life form, gathering experiences. That part stays in the background, observing the masquerade of the consciousness, observing how the consciousness is going through all types of evasions and questions and answers. Eventually that conscience comes to the decision, there really is nothing out there or inside. It's a peculiar game how this conscience comes to this decision. Because we don't see anything, we don't hear anything, and nothing dramatic has happened. So right away the conscience suddenly gives the impression to the consciousness, see, you're wasting your time, there's really nothing here but me, conscience. How many of us have not arrived at that state? Or have arrived at that state? Most of us have arrived at that state. But that's where the journey really begins. Because when you break through that level by trusting the conscience to be receptive and let loose, turn loose this inner peace, then we begin to get the inner experience of the life principle flowing within us. And the first experience we do have is the disassociation of the body and the sense of oneness with the spirit. When this comes, we can't live with the experience because we usually see ourselves inside of ourselves and outside of ourselves. And that's a shock to the brain, that God has become you. This life principle has become you. Therefore it recedes from that level and comes down back to the consciousness level and tries to pick up activity as a means of survival, as a means of importance. It tends to relate to the outside world, because the inside world doesn't go any further than the oneness of the spirit. The outside world now seems to be more attractive. The craving and the desire nature to expend energy as being important. Its importance is only temporary in terms of our breeding, in terms of our commitments and our responsibilities. But that's where we get our so-called ego drive, because we feel that we've got to be doing something outside in order to make waves in the ocean of life. And then we will become important individuals and we stand out like a sore thumb in society. Either we are accepted or rejected by it. we live with the illusion that action on the outside is realization. Action on the outside is not realization. Action on the outside is merely fulfilling desires for lack of comprehension with your conscience and your consciousness. When you shut down in sleep, your consciousness can't help you. It doesn't even tell you if you're a man or a woman. And if you don't wake up tomorrow morning, you have no other comprehension behind that point, because who are you going to tell it to? So all the actions that you perform outwardly as making waves in the ocean of life, where does it go? Where does it add up to? Who are you going to tell that to? Conscience comes back again as a probing force field in our being. It's that part which makes us question, what are we? Why are we caught up in this dualistic pull? What makes us reach out? Why are we so torn up between an outward and an inward life? The inward life is tranquility, serenity, conservation, centered on the conscience. The outward life is expression, centrifugal energy, projecting itself constantly, caught up in the addiction of repetition. We need both, because we are living in a dualistic environment. We need outward action as well as inward action. Outward action is only centered upon our occupation in terms of survival, and centered upon the individuals in which we relate to. At best, we can only carry them in our memory when we shut down. And when we shut down, if we believe they will really follow us someplace inside of ourselves, we're mistaken. The outside world can't follow us inside. It's like a man can't eat the food that's in your mouth. You have to eat your own food. He can't sleep for you. At best, you can only think of the possibilities of being satisfied by eating or relating to it. It is when you go inside and line up now the conscience with the consciousness, then we have, for the first time, a breakthrough into the inner reality. There is where the sound currents become magnified. And it's the sound currents that we have to listen for constantly, more and more, that enhances the peace. It's not so much what you see, because there are only certain things you can see inside that are of value. The rest are all assumptive late nature. The Creator made it that way. He made this world to entertain Himself. And we, the soul, have to go through life in a state of humility. At best, our ego doesn't help us, because the ego is concerned with the outside. It's concerned with the attachment. It's concerned with the sense of responsibility, sense of grief, sense of fear, sense of rejection, sense of importance, and all the ideas that would use up the energy of life to imply that it knows all there is to know about the creation. Conscience is a subtle force inside which is our pure being. It permits our consciousness to make all these waves Yet when any action is to be performed, any action that is of worthwhile consideration, that's going to really call upon us to measure up in any sense of the word, our consciousness lets us down. And we find out we have to fall back on our conscience. And the decision is finally reached and executed by the conscience. So, if conscience inside of us is the determining principle for our life existence and our behavior, then we have to learn to live in peace with it. We have to learn to trust it before it will relieve us of any fear and transfer to us any extrasensory ability. That is what is meant by who is in this temple. In that chant, it says, who is in this temple? Who is within this mechanism? All the doors open by themselves. That's the center, the chakras, the endocrine's counterpart. They open by themselves. That means they are set into motion from within by the conscience. And the lights go on by themselves, vibratory nature, the inner peace is also released by that conscience. And darkness, which is the desire level, or the craving for reaching out through the consciousness into the outside world, suddenly begins to dissipate, diminish, and we find now all our desire nature, all our attachments, all our so-called hang-ups falling off bit by bit. And our evolution is speeded up for the first time. We begin to experience a sense of unity, a sense of oneness, a sense of beingness. Meditation is a daily process of freeing the body from these tensions that build up through the consciousness, the various shocks that are imposed upon the body by the environment in the form of disease. We're supposed to be living in an inner harmony, an inner peace. And if we do that, that is when the conscience is lined up. Health flows normally, naturally. If we are not, then our consciousness is in a state of agitation, and it's carrying over all the thought impressions from our environment and from our parents. And we think we are living our own lives. We believe we are living our own lives, but so few live their own lives. Most of us are living the unfinished thought patterns, the suppressed thought patterns of the parents in many subtle ways and activities from inside. Some of it are removed at a certain point, but there are certain residues that often return. And we still have to work it out, clear it up, before we can actually balance it out. The inner harmony of the conscience is health. You never hear the words guilty consciousness. You always hear the words guilty conscience. The person is suffering from a guilty conscience, not from a guilty consciousness. Because consciousness is dualistic. It flows out, flows in. It's not concerned with stability. It's more concerned with assumptive nature. It's only to the conscience we can find the stability, the reality. Mm-hmm. But since we don't know too much of our conscience, that is, the consciousness not fully aware of the conscience and how it operates, then the consciousness lives in a state of semi-fear, semi-anxiety, because it is not secure. If the consciousness was secure by virtue of any type of training, it would trust the conscience. But because it doesn't have that kind of training or that type of encouragement from the environment or from its own programming or education, it doesn't trust the conscience. Therefore, it tries to set itself apart. It tries to separate itself by making itself important in terms of behavior. Then we find that we're in dire conflict with our own conscience. And then the conscience would not turn loose its power and give us that state of illumination that we're looking for. When the Master Jesus said, "As many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God," in essence he was saying, as many individuals whose consciousness would let go of the environment and accept their conscience, which is the him in themselves, or the vital spark, the eternal principle of nature, when that conscience is accepted as the sole reality, the bridge between the being and the God Self, the divine life, we would automatically transcend or become sons of light or illumined. We would feel this sense of enlightenment. There would be a sudden internal change for harmony, balance, and health. That balance, that flow would come on instantaneously. In some people, it comes on so instantly that, or instantaneous, that it's dramatic. In others, it comes on gradually. But however it comes on, from the conscience, there is that glow, there is that joy, there is that luminosity, that love, and that internal freedom of light, a sense of being. We can bring this about by speeding it up too, through certain internal approaches. By meditation, we can prepare the mind to withstand the shock of the release from the conscience. And in meditation, there are times when your conscience let go and wash out all the negative thought residues from your consciousness. And suddenly you find yourself wanting to cry, wanting to groan, wanting to yawn, wanting to scratch, twist or turn. And suddenly you find yourself in a state of release. These are all indications that the conscience is finally being recognized as the sole bridge between the being and the God Self, between the individual and his higher nature. Since we don't have a soul and we are soul, then conscience is the real guide, it's the real bridge that helps us to accept the reality of our nature and to what level we are ascending inside. Our conscience helps us to ascend the first level of internal experience, which is matter, acting on matter. And we begin to hear the audible life currents inside of ourselves. They vary for each one of us as to the degree of the receptivity. Sometimes you will hear the bee, or the flute, the harp, trumpet, conch shell, the drum beat, the bells, the roar of the ocean. Thunderclap, and finally you may hear the bagpipes blowing, and all of it will gradually become a symphony. As this symphony begins to play with inside of you, in that conscience, you are becoming realized. You're stepping out of the pull of your consciousness. When Jesus was in the body, he said, "I saw Satan fall from heaven like a light." That is to say, the conscience perceived consciousness emanating out from the God Self as a light energy. And Satan is the father of lies. Consciousness is dualistic, phenomenal. This light energy is absorbed and observed in our environment as a dualistic principle. It can be measured as a wave, and it can be measured as a corpuscle. And therefore there is no permanency and reality in light. And God is not light, for God is sound. Therefore the Christ intelligence or the conscience is indicating that we can trust our consciousness, which determines its existence by light. We use the consciousness through our five senses to guide ourselves around in our environment, created out of light, congealed as light, congealed in the form of matter, which is light. And this is a direct opposition. Satan means adversary, the word means adversary, direct opposition to the sun currents, which commands, corrects, dominates, and regulates our universe and gives us the inner peace. As our conscience becomes steady and centered on the ultrasonic frequencies within our being, then we are completely aligned with the Spirit, and we are liberated. We are liberated from the assumptive nature, the desire nature that tends to tear us down as we look outside through the five senses into the world of objectivity. The more we meditate and look inside and relate to the conscience, the more the conscience will guide us without the need of the five senses. So when Jesus said, "If the Son of Man be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me." If the consciousness, which is dualistic, which is the result of the procreative act or ego nature, is raised up to the conscience, then the conscience will draw it back into the God Self, the pure audible light stream. And the basis of our meditation is to bring this about, that this consciousness can line itself up with the conscience, so it can synchronize with the audible life current within the mechanism. And the experience is illumination, enlightenment, or oneness. And we are all connected in life. There is no such thing that we are separated. Only in the consciousness separation exists. And at best, consciousness is only good to the point when you're sound asleep and you don't know who you are. That is at best it can ever be. But conscience will always be with you even when you leave this frame, because that is what you have actually done with yourself. And no one is going to blame him for it. And you can't blame no one for having done anything to you. You can only blame yourself. It's a funny principle. There's no something for nothing in this universe. Yet you gotta love it. That's what God really is. Learning to love the insecurity and being secure in it. Is the insecurable security. you've got no guarantee that she can do anything for you until you live it. And when you live it, you've got to follow your conscience and not your consciousness. Any action you make in this world of manifestation will be judged upon your conscience and not your consciousness. Therefore, there is no condemnation. The creative principle, God, cannot condemn you in your actions. Only unto the Son, the bridge, the conscience, there is judgment. And judgment is not punishment. Condemnation is not separation. Since there is no condemnation in the audible life stream, then we can't be separated from Him. We are connected to Him all through eternity, in spite of our ridiculous behavior through our consciousness. And our conscience is going to judge us, but our conscience is not going to penalize us. It's only our consciousness is going to penalize us, the very same thing that created the problem. Your consciousness is going to make you come back to face it. And that's what the reincarnation is all about. You're brought back to face your consciousness. Children who fail to pass their grades go home and mumble to daddy or mommy. Mommy and daddy may get upset and give them a good scolding. The school is not going to change their policy. You didn't pass the grade, and you know you didn't do it, but your consciousness is to come back and do it next term. And that is the real inner struggle. Consciousness, conscience, audible life stream, the Trinity. In a simple way you could ever live with it. You can also call it Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Or the creative intelligence, the Christ Self, or the opposition, Satan. There's no Satan. It's just the dualistic consciousness. God is not light. God is sound. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word is God, or was God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt in man. But let there be light. And out of light came a creation, a dualistic principle, Maya, illusion, the Hindu terminology for our world in which we live in. Jesus merely called it Satan, the adversary, the centrifugal energy that flows out from the source of being. Everything has to go back by centripetal energy. And going back is the love for the conscience, or the Christ in you. You have to make the distinction between consciousness and conscience. At best, the masters can only come down who are individuals who have learned to line up their consciousness with their conscience and live in the world with us to show that the dualistic nature of the consciousness does not control their existence. But it is conscience that controls them, or the moralistic behavior of their life that makes them function in society. When we accept that and don't try to make it too complicated, then we will develop simplicity, a self-innocence, and non-guile. And the bodily cells will begin to take that on. You can see it in fully realized people. The softness, the tenderness, the naturalness of them all. They're like children amidst it all. Simply because their conscience is free, liberated. But the consciousness of can get bogged down and clogged up. You see, in creation, the creative function of creation is to keep us here, and the highest bonus it will ever offer in the human mind is the ability to invent the ever new model. Once you invent something with your consciousness, the next thing that comes up in your mind is to create a new model of it, because you can never be satisfied with your consciousness. And as long as you're going to keep creating a new model of it, then you're addicted, and then you're back here in creation again. You're here to entertain instead of be free. We will be creating more and more. There's nothing wrong in creation. It's designed for us to recognize and to function in it. And some of us are going to create and keep on creating. All of us are going to recognize the purpose and just step out of it. Now, inner peace can be experienced on three levels. In the act of creation, but then there is the feeling of improvement in the act of creation, because you'll never be satisfied with what you've created. You're always going to want to make a better model of it. Even the great creator himself is not finished with us. We have to become perfect. You see, he too had to leave it right there. And we are taking up the unfinished job of trying to prove to him we're going to be better. We can find inner peace by conservation of our forces, by going in and centering ourselves on the conscience and living with our inner nature and not wasting the energy, appreciating the value of living. The third way we can find the inner peace is in the alliance or unity with the sun currents. They are eternal. They are the ones that lift us out of the dualistic existence. And that is the peace that the Master Jesus meant when he said, "The peace I give, the world don't give." Consciousness cannot give you the real peace, because you'll want to keep improving, keep renewing and remodeling. Conscience gives you the conservation. The audible life current gives you the unity. It is the conservation and the unity that we are all seeking inside of ourselves. How to conserve our energies and then to unite with life as a whole. In the conservation and in the unity, we develop devotion. In the functioning of the consciousness and the outward analysis and trying to express creativity by improving upon it every time, we acquire only knowledge. And devotion is called the tree of life in us, and it stems from our conscience by centering it upon the audible life current in the body. And the tree of knowledge is the consciousness focusing outwardly with its various desires, craving to constantly making new models of the creativity. So, all in all, when we begin to meditate, we are very fortunate to come to the realization that we can face ourselves and withdraw from the pull of the desire nature locked up in the consciousness and center it upon the conscience that gives us the inner peace and unify us with these audible currents inside of our being. Scientists are now admitting that the human body is one big orchestra. And you begin to hear it inside. You don't need nothing from the outside because it's all music. And it's called the Holy Comforter. The whole thing is comforting to you. Because music really comes from inside. It's the soul nature playing. And once I asked the question, what is music? And at best, everybody agreed that music is organized noise. So, if the body is organized from within by the audible life stream, then the best music is yet to be heard. It's inside of you. The various levels of creation mentioned in the scriptures are only conditions of nature. The first level is matter acting on matter. Second level is energy acting on matter. They have Sanskrit names for them. The third level is consciousness acting on matter. As far as man's creation has come, he's just in the field of energy acting on matter, and he's just discovering a little of consciousness acting on matter. And then the fourth level up is energy acting on energy, which is the world of manifestation or time, Kal, or Adonai, the Lord of creation. Then the next four up, because the universe is an octave of eight, music is an octave, the word is music, you see, the cosmic is a musical principle. The next four up, or the fifth level, which they call the master level, that is consciousness now acting on energy. For the first time we have energy that the universe is sustained by, controlled by a consciousness, the power to run it, the master level. So we say a master from the fifth realm, an ability to regulate the environment through the manifestation of desire. The sixth realm up is consciousness acting on consciousness. The seventh is beingness acting on consciousness. And finally, the full octave is beingness acting on beingness. The last four is the unmanifested universe. There is no light in that universe, it's all sankarans. It's called the world of the unknowable, or the unmanifest, agamlok, the unnameable. It's the unmanifested universe, because consciousness regulates it, and beingness controls consciousness. Since there is no light, only the realized individual can take us up into it. And therefore, when we begin to meditate, our journey is centered on our conscience and not our consciousness. And the conscience will take us all the way up, because conscience is beingness, conscience is God too. You see, God cannot escape his own conscience, because he is the conscience itself. He is the principle that sustains us from within. He is the sole reality of our nature. So, when we do meditate, we are brought face to face with our conscience. So you see, God is not too far from us. is the actual mirror within our own makeup in the form of the conscience. You know that little story, mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the fairest of them all? It really means conscience, conscience running in my mind. What kind of dirty thoughts am I carrying on now? Am I free from negative thought patterns? See? And that's the Satchkan we have to come to face, the abode of God, conscience. We're lifted out into that state to face the true conscience or the pure conscience. It's freedom from the sensory world, freedom from the world of manifestation. And we can free ourselves immediately and not wait for a long series of progressional activity. That's why meditation is a speeding up process. It helps us to come to grips with our conscience right away. That is the true master in all of us. Human forms are never really masters. At best, they all have a disease in their body. The true master in the human being is conscience, because you have to live with it. You have to confront it. And you can't even give it a name. You know, you can't even name the conscience. What would you call it? You know it's in you. You know it's the one thing that you can trust, or the one thing you're afraid of. Yet you can't name it. Peculiar. How your consciousness will try every way possible to make the resolution, but it can't. The consciousness has to surrender to the conscience. It has to let the conscience run it, regulate it. Yet the sense of trust comes from another level. It doesn't come from your consciousness. Neither does it come from the conscience. It comes from the vital principle life itself in you. That subtle part of you, which is life, the audible life stream, gives you the sense of trust in your conscience. Anytime you're going to make a decision and have to live it out on a factual, physical level, you're going to do what your conscience tells you to do. You see how close you are to the reality of the God Self. It's not somewhere out there in space, it's right in this little cranium of ours. Every moment we are making decisions with our life energy and our consciousness, and has to act them out. And conscience is the determining factor by which we live it out. So, by essence of that, you can see divine will is immediately applied. It is not something that we have to go and say, please, dear God, give it to me. Show me what to do. Please, dear God, is your conscience already telling you how to do it by acting it. And that wherever you are, it's the right place. It's the right time. And the experience is right for you. It's neither good nor bad. Just that opportunity to test your behavior, how you will act with your conscience. Conscience brings us face to face with the reality of ourselves. We can give these forces within ourselves various names, but when we come down to live it in the actual living of the basic feelings, we find that we are really dealing with our consciousness and our conscience and our life stream. That does not detract or take away from its importance or its magnitude or cosmology. No. In fact, it simplifies our cosmology for us and gives us a deeper sense of respect for the nature in which we are formed. We can see how this creative intelligence had taken a complex situation, reduce it to a simple process and at the same time magnified it to the point of infinity, that there is no end to it. Maybe. And in the outward life, we have to meet human beings on the same level, because they have to live out the same behavior pattern. We can't love our neighbors until we learn to love ourselves. And if we learn to love ourselves, we are confronted with consciousness, conscience, and life current. And what is your neighbor? Only a replica or a common copy of the same principle, with a different variation of externalization of the body. We are like bulbs. And each bulb may be distinct from the other. And we may vary in wattage and luminosity of expression. But we all have to be plugged into a socket and be lit up. And it's only that particular one. Then we discover that because in its simplicity now we can live life wherever we are. You don't have to run away to mountains, caves, forests, or penthouses. The living of the spiritual life is here and now, in the physical body, in your environment, with your fellow men. Because it's the dynamics of existence. You are free for the first time for life. You're not freed from life. To be free from life is evasion. To be freed for life is liberation. Because more life will flow into you. More life will present opportunities to make decisions without condemnation. So consciousness is the only barrier when applied negatively, but when applied positive is an asset. It's an asset to the conscience, it's an asset to the life stream. In a negative way, it's the craving for domination from the environment, or the enslavement to the environment. We have to use our consciousness to guide us around externally, but we can't depend on it to give decisions or make decisions or live out decisions. We have to depend on our conscience to do that. Any decision that's going to be lived up to, or any transaction or commitment that is going to be experienced or lived up to, it has to be done from the conscience level. For example, you see a beautiful suit in the showcase and you want it. Your conscience will tell you, do you have enough money? Or you have to commit yourself to it. Whatever the decision is made towards that object, conscience has to fulfill it. You see? Conscience runs our inner levels. Consciousness runs the outer level. And consciousness on the outer level is only capable of making choices, but not capable of fulfilling them. It's conscience that must fulfill all decisions or all choice made by the consciousness. So, to a certain extent, we can't really trust our consciousness. We have to train it to cooperate with conscience. And this is what a meditative life does for you. The daily meditation is that process that tends to bring it into unity, so it can work for the first time to your advantage. And to your advantage only means in alliance with the life spirit, the life currents in your body. Any questions?
This highest self within ourselves, you said that when we reach God realization or something, we see our highest self. Well, there's two people, and when you die, you have one person that steps out, and what about your higher self? Where's your higher self?
The energy that feeds that thing that stepped out.
Is it a form?
No, it's energy. God is energy. He's life. Creative life. Is the audible life current, vibratory force field.
I mean, when everybody dies and you're on the other side, we all look like light bulbs to one another?
We don't look like nothing. We only look in relation to what we think we're supposed to look. And that's consciousness that does that for us. See, consciousness keeps repeating the light image of the memory of the association with the physical form. At best, it can only carry what it's supposed to look like. It really doesn't have any form. It's all light, radiance, luminosity. Even a master inside, after a while, he disappears into luminous light. He really has no form. We carry the form by association, by attachment, by commitment. These are mental functions of the consciousness, not the conscience. Pure conscience is life, energy, love, pure essence. It has no form. It flows within us and in everything.
What about in the dream state?
The dream state, again, is your consciousness that is making the associations. You dream that you look like something because you've already accepted what you're supposed to look like. Therefore, your consciousness is determining that already. You expect that. Consciousness is assumptive. It assumes that it has to look like you, with blonde hair, 5'8", a female. At best, when we go on the other side, are we naked or do we wear clothes?
Anywhere you want it.
But that's consciousness doing that. Any way you want it would be consciousness, not conscience. See, energy has no sex or anything.
But if our higher self is supposed to know better, and we're supposed to be, that's God within us, then how come we're not that God realized when we step into the other side?
We are God realized when we step into the other side, when we take away all the images of it. Thou shalt have no graven image before me. See? I am thy Lord, thy God. Thou shalt have no other gods, no other form or graven image. That means impressed from your consciousness. Don't carry your consciousness in there, because it can't do a single thing for you in there. At best, it will only confuse and make more images. And the me, which is the real essence or real conscience, don't have a form. It's a bridge between the conscious world and the life energy within you. So that conscience is really the connecting bridge, but it has no form. It doesn't even have a name. It just really relates to something that holds on to keep us in balance. It's called the nameless and the formless. But the mind has to have something to satisfy, because it does not want to let go of its independence and become united with it. The sense of unity is a very hard thing to acquire. The sense of separateness is a very easy thing to live with, and is the very source of our fears, the sense of separateness. Yet it's the one thing you hold on to the most. How many of us are willing to unite with God? Ask yourself the question. We talk about wanting to know God. Do you really want to know Him truly in the sense of unity, or is the sense of separateness?
Everybody's
afraid. Yeah, because your separateness gives you independence that you can talk back to Him.
Alright, and another question. If God made souls and we are supposed to be God, then how do we ever get made?
Here is a notion. What makes waves come up on the ocean? Where do they come from? There's the ocean right there. Take away the waves, what would you call it? The largest swimming pool in the world. Give it waves, then you call it an ocean. What causes waves to come out of the ocean? What makes the wave different from the ocean? Is the wave separated from the ocean? Individual from the ocean?
But why do they talk about God making souls?
It's the same thing, I'm showing you, the same thing. They're using this particular semantic way of describing what the ocean of life is. God is the audible life stream, the whole ocean of life, and out of it comes up waves of existing forms called soul. So how does a wave come out of the ocean? You've been to the ocean many times. How does the wave come out of it? How does it form itself? By what force does it form itself? You mean everybody? The wind forced the waves to have an appearance on the surface of the water. Otherwise, there is no wave. Now, what is that wind? The breath. God breathed into man the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Because He made man out of energy. Come and let us make man in our own image and likeness. Two things. Energy, which is the atom, having no shape nor form or reality, more than the fact that it's light. And that is dualistic. And likeness, which is conscious vibration or acceleration. In this dualistic world, we appear to have an existence by the breath that is put into us, the wind that is blowing across the ocean, the big swimming pool called ocean, and now appear to have waves. No wind, no waves, no breath of life, no you. Life is an empty dream, and we are merely actors, and we have our entrances and our exits, and at best we only know nothing. But it's the game to satisfy and entertain the creative intelligence, because He loves us so much. He wants to be entertained by it. So He allows the wind to blow across the whole force field to make waves, to give it an importance. Why did you refer to your mind as waves? So it's going back and forth, you see. The ocean of the mind is always referred to water. And it's the biggest part of your whole existence in your body. You have five forces inside of you, and they come and go all the time. Out of the one river of paradise, which is ether, the sun current, flow the four rivers that form the universe. Earth, water, fire, air. These are the five forces of the universe. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. That is to say, solid, which is earth, liquid, which is water, fire, which is thermal, air, which is gaseous or plastic, and ether, which is sound. Now light appears to have some kind of possibility of existence in this ether. But light is a dualistic, it's a Jekyll and Hyde, therefore it's a father of lies. A lie is a dualistic principle. It's not a permanent principle. You can't rely on light. The only thing you can actually rely on is sound. So, when we come back to ourselves in essence and look at ourselves objectively and start clearing out all the cobwebs of the so-called metaphysical semantics, we are facing the first time a reality of universal life streams flowing all the time. And it's centered on conscience. And conscience can only judge, it can't punish. And life can only supply, it cannot condemn. The game is not in the conscience, and the game is not in the life stream. The game is in the consciousness, which is the light. Let there be light, and if there was no light, there'd be no universe. It's all darkness, which is sound. Sound has no light, it's all darkness. The whole cosmos is sound. But any time that sound decides to say to itself, let us make light, sound has to say it, you see. Light can't say it to itself because it doesn't know what to say. So we call the light Satan, the adversary, the centrifugal energy that flows out, that drops down, that comes down. When down don't mean bad. It comes out from the unmanifested level into the manifested states of appearance, which is retinal photography, the five senses, Maya, illusion.
Do you meditate on the other side?
No, you live in the other side, because there is no other side. Have you ever stood up at a door and look at it and ask which side is in or out? It's in because you're in one side boxed in. It's out because you're denied going in the other side, right? So there really is no in and out. It's only in relative relationship. So in and out inside of this being, this is being, this is a miniature universe. This is a miniature expression of the whole thing. So where is in and out in the whole thing in the first place? There is nothing as far as the consciousness is concerned, and I'm not saying conscience, the consciousness is concerned, that is real. And that's why the yogis start out with saying, to seek God, practice algebra. No, you ever practice algebra? Alright. If you want to find quantity X in an equation, what do you first have to do?
Is it x by itself?
Mm-hmm. 36x plus 25y in a little cup, like, multiply by 46x minus 3y in another little cup, divided by 30x plus so many y, that over 450, and you want to say, now find what x is equal to. What are you going to do?
Call a mathematician.
And you go through the whole thing, not this, not this, not this, not this, not this, and before you know it, you have to work the whole thing down to come out to find out what x equals to. And that's the same thing you're doing in a meditation when you're trying to realize God. God is not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. He's none of these things. At best, you can only end up after the final reduction between your consciousness and your conscience and the energy that flows through you. That's what the Trinity is all about. That's why it's a Trinity. It's positive, negative, and neutral. And negative has nothing to do with bad. There's no bad in this universe. This universe is all flow. That's what the universe is all about. Flow. F-L-O-W. And flow is unity. Therefore, when you feel peace, what do you feel? You feel a flow of unity in your being. and you have to live with it. You have to let the consciousness accept that as the essence of you, because the conscience already accepted it and the life energy already accepted that, but the consciousness can't. The consciousness is busy making games. It's busy trying to play games with itself. And that is why realized teachers or come back into the world of flow to lift us up from the conflict of the flow, to show us that there is nothing to be in a state of frenzy about. Just look at yourself. And the very fact of looking at yourself, you'll discover that the whole thing is caused by your consciousness. Because you have to analyze the experiences that you're feeling or encountering by your consciousness. In fact, you're using your consciousness more to do all the evaluations. So your consciousness is like a stick, you know. How many ends a stick has? All right, you're sure. Everybody positive?
Yes, we have two.
You're positive?
Oh, it's a positive one.
Yeah. Push the ends in, what you got? To the middle.
One.
How come it get one? You don't have no ends when you push them in together. Your mind will tell you think of one, because you can use your mind to ascertain geometrically now from when it was pulled out. And if you push it in, you have a dot. Does a dot have ends?
You made a pamphlet.
No, it's not that. It's just that what it really is. You take this stick here and reduce it down to itself by mere compression. By the principle of compression, pushing the ends back into themselves. This a stick is only an extension of a point in beingness.
All right. If you don't feel guilty about doing something when you're alive, and then you die, you shouldn't feel guilty about it either. Then how do you judge yourself? I mean, how do you punish yourself?
In God, which is life, there is no condemnation. In the conscience, it's only judgment, but no penalty. In consciousness, there is penalty. So your consciousness is your hell. You yourself is heaven and hell. Your heaven is your conscience and your life stream. And your hell is your consciousness, because it has the conflicts of going back and forth and questioning the possibility of the rights and wrongs and the comparisons of not measuring up. So where are you going to get the hell from? It's right in your consciousness. I sent my soul out into the invisible, Omar Khayyam once said. A letter of the afterlife to spell. And by the soul came back and said, I myself am heaven and hell. Nobody, no place, there is no such place, because the soul is a integrated principle of consciousness, conscience and energy. It's so integrated that there's no way for it to go and come back. So it actually didn't go no place. It was there all the time looking at itself. And by looking at itself here in the eternal nowness, it realized that it created its own heaven and hell by its own consciousness.
In other words, if you die and you feel that you're right and you don't feel that you've done anything wrong, and then you have to be thrown back into the life stream, don't the gods decide how your whole life, I mean, don't they bring everybody together for you and rearrange things, and they decide the karma that you have to pay? Do you understand what
I mean? I understand you very clearly. But you see, if you backtrack to what you've just said, these are all the various games of consciousness. Not conscience and not life. Is the Pacific Ocean, the waves on the Pacific Ocean, bigger than the waves on the Atlantic Ocean? And bigger than the waves on the Indian Ocean?
What coast? No, it's
only the velocity of the wind that gives you size of a wave. You mean to tell me when you go to Hawaii and see the big Manaloa winds blowing, or whatever the big waves, the big surfers coming in, and they call the big five or the big three, or what it is? It's wind that does that. You have to have the wind to create it. So the winds of desire blows across our consciousness and makes us either praise or condemn ourselves or punish ourselves, but not the conscience and not the life energy. The life energy cannot condemn, because the life energy is neutral. The conscience is positive, therefore it can only judge, but it cannot punish. The consciousness is negative, therefore it has to punish itself by virtue of internal action. It negates its own existence, therefore it's dualistic, and so it must generate desire to do it. And only by desire, which you call the breath principle, the incoming outgoing function, is this thing possible. Otherwise it's not possible. And a master is a person who is in total polarity, showing you the whole thing working within himself, helping you to gain this polarity. And that is what God realization is, the realization of the life current, the conscience and the consciousness acting as one. But we don't have it acting as one, therefore we are caught up in the tug of wars of it. So who are you going to punish when you die?
Yourself.
Right. You are your own heaven, your own hell. The first portion of the so-called hell would be the manifested universe. We're in a hell already. This world in which we live in is already a conflict world, because it's manifested out of light. And when we get out of it, it's a reservoir or a haven. Therefore, there's no more conflicts in it. We become the alphabet in the alphabet soup.
In other words, everybody loves everybody else on the other side.
Yes. Not always true, though. We're supposed to love everybody on the other side, but we don't always do it. Because you may see somebody you don't like, you know. So what are you doing over here? You have no right to be up here.
And they have schools on the other side to teach you this.
Well,
also,
again, we designed this to suit ourselves, because we are very, very inhibited to the idea that we can't become one energy. So we carrying our separateness from the association with the manifested universe into the unmanifested universe. Let me show you something. Is honey a liquid? What is it?
Yeah, I guess it would be.
All right, hot water is liquid.
Yeah.
Good. You throw the honey in the hot water and look at them for a while. What happens? For the first time, you drop the honey in the water. Apart from that, the honey still keeps its shape, right? The honey keeps
yes,
its shape.
Yes,
it doesn't amalgamate with or unify itself with the water.
Right.
All right. You can drink off the water, it may get a slight taste of the honey, but the honey will still be down in the bottom of the container. right?
Right.
Okay. Before you put them in together, they are individuals. But in your mind, honey will melt if it's heated up. So you're going to put it in boiling water, right?
Right.
So what it should do? They should melt and get together. Because the water is boiling, and if you put honey in there or anything like that, it will melt it.
Right.
How come they don't get together even when the water is boiling? Now? So they don't get together, and for a brief moment you start to say to yourself, they don't associate. They keep their individuality. So the honey has to learn now how to live by itself in that hot water. You are saying the same thing, that when you die, you're going on the other side, and you don't integrate to the other side, so you're going to go to school and keep your individuality.
No, I just asked you if they did that.
I'm sure you something was going to happen. You take a spoon and stir it up. What happened in the glass with the honey and the hot water?
Mixed together.
You can't separate the honey from the water no more. They're all together as one. There is no differentiation. Life on the other side is not static, like throwing a spoonful of honey into a glass of hot water and let it sit there. It's swirling life force. It's not dead force. So everything that returns back to the reservoir is automatically reblended as a pure life stream. So we all become one. Because that's the unmanifested universe. There is no separateness in it. But then we are sent out back again. And how would you take the honey out of the hot water? Think.
Cool
it down, go freeze it. The honey will start separating from the water, because one is thicker than the other. Same thing, when you're thrown back into the manifested world, the density of your karma will separate you from your fellow men. Each one of us clogged up our particular life stream with certain thought patterns, and the density of those thought patterns will differentiate us again. We will start breaking out into different fields of expression. So we would give this universe some degree of distinctness or separateness. Otherwise this universe would have nothing to differentiate. It would be like the other side. You see? Now, on the other side everything is one, on this side everything is separate. So when we're in the separate state, what do we pray for?
Unity.
And when we're in the unity state, what do we pray for? Do you see how you can never be satisfied with yourself?
When you cool down the liquid and the honey drops out, it's the honey is the same honey that you originally put in. When we're thrown into the other side and we get all mixed together, or before we're thrown on the other side, while we're here, there at least appears to be a uniqueness about each of us. This is one of our hang-ups. We each appear to ourselves to be unique and separate.
Right.
And we're thrown into the other side and mixed up, but when we're brought back over here and separate out again, is it the same, I don't know how to say it, is it the same unique thing that was here before, or is it not, is it different?
No, it's the same unique thing, the law of conservation of energy. Can't make anything new out of what he hasn't got, you know. But the mind, again, has to play the dualistic role of forgetfulness, lest you become bored with the game. You see, the game is to continue with the ever-newness of improvement. Otherwise, you would not play the game. Stagnation is not a game. It's like when you play chess. The two major moves in chess are what?
Check.
But that's no more a game. Right? So if there are not going to be a game, then those two would be imposed upon right at the start. If there's going to be a game, then we don't impose that. We make the game go.
Dad, I just had a funny thought. You'd say, oh, look at that honey deal. That reminds me of when I got in hot water with, you know, karma from a previous life. I thought it was funny.
Picking up your thought, Liz. The game is to go on, you see. That's why the poet, he said this statement: mine is not the reason why. Mine is to do and die. But he's not using the word die in the sense of cessation of activity. He's using the word die in relation to ideas of existence. He wants to do wherever he is and let go or die from all ideas of behavior and existence. So Jesus said to the man, let the dead bury the dead. Let those who have old ideas of old concepts of existence continue with their concept of existence. You follow me. You do the action. Consciousness is a dying principle. It's not a sustaining principle. It's subject to negation, subject to diminishing. It is conscience that sustains. Conscience is the living principle. See? You can always have a change of consciousness, but still again, whenever you change that consciousness, it is conscience that has to make the action, and conscience has got to live with it again. See, the print is always made on the conscience. If it was not for that, we couldn't recycle a person. It would be absolutely a useless science, recycling a person, if it wasn't for that. That the thing is registered in the conscience levels, not in the conscious level. You see, not too long ago I met a doctor who was a surgeon in pain research, and is very trained in neurosurgery, and he has training in psychiatry. And with all his research and his colleagues, they couldn't get rid of three pains that appears in his body at three different intervals in the year and in three different parts of the body. One is in the just by the thigh, another was on the chest, and another was in the throat. They did every type of research from conscious alpha wave levels using different machines and could never find the real cause to eradicate. He happened to meet some friends from Virginia Beach who have worked on recycling, and they had spoken to him, and he was interested to find out this technique of what it's all about. Last time I was in Chicago, and this was where I was, he came to see me just for one day. And in the conversation, I said to him, we are in mutual agreement that 90% of the disease is psychosomatic, just about 10% is pathological or physical. He says yes, and they've done so much research that they are in total agreement that it's all psychological. But where psychological? In the conscious level or in the conscience level? He was the first man that used the term conscience level. I said, how come you arrive at the term conscience level? Because I only know yogis use that term. He says, we're getting there. We've got a couple of yogis we're working on. And they're already using it. So they're getting to use the term conscience level. I said, good. Now in your conscience level, have you found out where the pain is reacting in your body? He says, no, I can't. He says, I've tried everything. I've tried regression. I've tried hypnosis. I've tried all our psychiatric techniques, even drug therapy, to get back to the cause of the three pains, but I can't get to the real cause. There's no way I can get rid of it. That's been bothering me. And all I do to get rid of it, he invented a machine called a pain control machine, which he attaches to his spine, and he regulates like a hearing aid. Whenever the pain gets intense, he regulates the electrical charge and sends impulses into the area and deadens the pain for the duration of the time that the pain will come up. That's the best he's got. You can imagine a person walking around the unit like that. They have them now because he's the inventor of it. Anyway, he says that's not a practical solution either. He said this is only a temporary thing. We want to. He said if I can find a way to get deep down inside, then I wouldn't need the machine. He says, all right, I make some money in it, but well, that's not helping the patient. He says the only other thing you can rely on is the drugs, and that's not going to be any good because you can get tolerance levels. The next thing you can go to is destruct surgery, where you cut out an organ, and this again, he says, you have side effects because you incapacitate a person from a part of his anatomy that he needs. Every time you take away a portion of his anatomy, you're taking away from the creative pattern. And the creative pattern was not designed to be diminished. It was designed to remain as is if you can find the right cause and function back as it's supposed to. So we talked for a while. I said, well, okay, my technique is a little different. The only way we're going to prove it to you, it may not sound like anything. It says, where you feel the first pain? He says, and right about here. He says, can you remember when this pain came up? No. There's absolutely no memory of it. We've tried regression, we've tried methods to go back in hypnosis and never work out. I said, okay, I don't want you to tell me any more about your pain. All I want to ask is one simple question. What color comes to your mind when you think of the pain? He looks at me, it's funny, he says, I think of red, I don't know why. So as I said, a threat to your lifestyle. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, before you got married, the girl that you were going with wanted to have marital intercourse. Look at me, like if I'd read the man's whole life. Like if I'd exposed him. He said, wow. He says, you know, I hate to admit this, but it's true what you're saying. I was a junior in medical college. And the girl that I married is not the girl that I went out with. And the girl that I went out with the first time, this was the situation. And I brought up as a Lutheran, could not give in to the idea of premarital sex. Never got married, he says, and it was exactly 3 weeks. I felt this pain right in this area. And it comes at a certain time of the year, just in June. And it's always June, that particular time of the year, and that particular. But you could never relate it with that. That the pain would come as a repetitive pattern. Now he recognized the cause of the pain, where it comes from. But we're not performing any therapy because I says I don't have time to perform the therapy in it. But I'm giving you the indication where the thing is. In your conscience bank. Not in your consciousness bank, but in your conscience bank where this thing is locked up. The second pain is in the heart area. So I said to him, don't let's go too far because you don't have much time, you got to catch a plane. Let's take them as they come along. Can you remember what time of the year? November, the pain comes on. You'll have no recollection of why it comes on? No. I said, well, okay, tell me what color comes again to you when you think of the pain in your chest. So he said, green. But I don't know why I'm saying green, because I'm a type of guy, you see what kind of clothes I wear, very drab clothes. He says, green. I says, yeah. Rejection. And he looked at me and said, wow. And then he looks to the host and he says, you know, I think I've met the best psychiatrist I ever met, because how many people can pin down your problem so fast? He says, this is a fantastic type of diagnosis. I've never heard anything like this. I am rejecting something, and I know it was in November, 3 years ago, that they did at the College of Surgeons that I proposed and was turned down. But he said, I have never thought of associating it or being hurt by it, because I felt offended but never thought the impact would be this deep. I said to him, yes, your conscience will always carry every insult, injury or shock, and your consciousness will carry every type of evasion to hide it or avoid it, but your conscience has to carry it. So he pinned down the one in his chest. Then the final one was in the throat. So he says, you don't have to ask me, I can tell you what's coming in my mind, blue. He could anticipate the question. He says, this was the funniest thing. He says, I just wanted to say it, but I didn't know why. I said, blue. I said, did I blow the whole thing? I said, yeah, you blew the whole thing. And that was really, it was a resentment pattern. Oh, wow, he says, to my host, he says, well, I really learned something about psychiatry today. It's true, I did resent it, the way I was treated in certain things, in certain work. Never got the credit or recognition in a certain program he took part in, and he resented the fact. Anyway, he couldn't spend much time, he had to catch his plane. So he bid me goodbye that day, and he went. It was that afternoon that the host told me what he had said, and she had driven them to the airport. He said to tell me that he realized the technique is so unique that no one can do it to himself, even though he discovered it, and were he to attempt to work it on himself, it will be fouled up because you couldn't time it. And even if you try to time it from your own personal experience in your conscience, you would block the actual release. A person would have to be with another person who can time the biological symptoms to release that pressure, he said, but was very happy to know that the three major causes were pinned down. He says, and in a strange way, there's a sense of relief of the tension, but it's not gone. It's relief from the consciousness, but not from the conscience as yet. And he's hoping to see me when I get back again, to work it out on a permanent basis, but to tell me that on the conscious level, not on the conscious level, there has been a degree of release. So we're coming back to this situation when you're facing yourself, otherwise recycling would be a useless science, to go back to what really causes these things to happen inside of us, you see. It ties up most of all of our problems that face us from a psychological level.